ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Here it is. Biggest moment of a legendary career. Phil defeats Father Time.
That was just 10 months ago at the 2021 PGA Championship when Phil Mickelson became the oldest major winner in the history of golf at age 50. An unprecedented trajectory that should have carried him to Augusta, Georgia, where the Masters are underway this week. But Phil Mickelson is not playing in his favorite tournament. In fact, Phil hasn't been seen on the PGA Tour at all in months, and nobody's sure when they'll see him again. So today, as Augusta prays for the return of Tiger Woods, Mark Schlabaugh reports the story of his rival, the legend in exile, the man who isn't there, because Phil Mickelson cozied up to an authoritarian government and tried to overthrow the PGA itself. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, April 6th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Mark Schlabaugh, the obviously huge story at the beginning of Masters Week is whether Tiger Woods is or isn't going to play, all of the drama there. But I'm calling you onto this show because I need to dive into your reporting on the saga of a guy who we know for certain is not going to be playing in Augusta this week. The foremost rival to Tiger Woods, I'm talking about Phil Mickelson. And Mark, for people who don't remember here, right, it's worth pointing this out. Less than a year ago, we were celebrating Phil as the oldest major champion ever. He had just won the PGA at age 50. And now he's about to miss what would have been his 30th Masters tournament. I mean, that's the tournament he's called his favorite. It's the one he's won three times, the one he hasn't missed since 1994. And so we're going to go through step by step what you've reported here and your understanding of a very complex story. But just off the top, in a couple sentences, can you tell us why Phil Mickelson will not be in Augusta this week?
Pablo, he's taken a leave of absence. What we don't know is whether or not it's his own decision to take that leave of absence or if someone at the PGA Tour told him to take some time off. The tour does not publicly disclose discipline of players. That being said, that has nothing to do with the situation at Augusta National Golf Club because, you know, the club controls the Masters, and we don't know if Fred Ridley, the chairman, picked up the phone and said, hey, Phil, not this year, or if this truly is Phil's decision not to be here this week.
And all this drama, Mark, it really stems from these comments that Phil made that came to light in February about a proposed new golf league funded by the government of Saudi Arabia that would have competed with the PGA Tour. So remind us how Phil's comments became public.
Alan Shipnuck, who used to work for Sports Illustrated and some other golf publications, has his own website now, Fire Pit Collective. He's, for the last several months, been working on an unauthorized biography of Mickelson and has talked to probably more than 100 people about Mickelson. And he'd reached out to Phil and his team several times to get Mickelson to sit down with him and talk, and he tried a few times and it never, the interview never came to fruition. And then last fall, just as he was finishing up the manuscript and about to ship it to his publisher, Mickelson reached out and said, hey, I want to talk.
So how would you describe what Phil Mickelson said?
I mean, it was mind numbing. that it would even come out of his mouth, especially considering he was speaking to a journalist and a guy writing an unauthorized biography about him. But, you know, he called the Saudis scary motherfuckers and said we know they killed this journalist. We know they kill gay people. You know, knowing all this, why would I even consider it? Oh, because it'll give me leverage with the PGA Tour. I mean, it was just, he couldn't have said much of anything that could have been worse.
No, I mean, he literally says, quote, "There's scary motherfuckers to get involved with. We know they killed Khashoggi," referring to Washington Post reporter Jamal Khashoggi. "We know they have a horrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all this, why would I even consider it? Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates." And that, I mean, I know that Phil's kind of a loose cannon, but this felt like a new sort of bar being set in terms of regrettable things you say to a media person.
No, on top of that, a guy writing an unauthorized biography about you. But, I mean, he didn't stop there. I mean, he admitted that he had enlisted three other PGA Tour players to pay for attorneys to write up and draft the operating agreement for the proposed breakaway tour. So not only was he in discussions with the organizers and financiers of a rival league to the PGA Tour, but he was involved in actually creating the league and, you know, trying to recruit other players to join it.
Right. And he went on even further about the PGA Tour, specifically saying, quote, "They've been able to get by with manipulative, coercive, strong-arm tactics because we, the players, had no recourse." And then he sort of goes on from there and he says, "As nice a guy as Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, comes across as, unless you have leverage, he won't do what's right. And the Saudi money has finally given us that leverage. I'm not sure I even want this Saudi Super League, the SGL, to succeed, but just the idea of it is allowing us to get things done with the tour," end quote. And Mark, I just wanted to get your reaction to just like the quote specifically. I mean, when I first heard it, my jaw dropped. And I'm just curious what your reaction was when you first heard that quote.
I mean, I was stunned that somebody would say that to a journalist and to a guy writing an unauthorized biography about him. You know, the fact that he acknowledges he knows what the Saudis allegedly have done over the years, and the fact he's just using it for leverage, and if he ends up going to Saudi, he knows he's taking blood money, but he's, you know, going to look past that. I mean, it's unbelievable.
So Mark, let's just start at the very beginning with what this idea even is. Like, what is this proposed golf league in Saudi Arabia, the Super Golf League, as they've hypothetically called it?
It's a proposed breakaway league being funded by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, which is worth more than $500 billion. Greg Norman, the former PGA Tour pro from Australia, is the CEO of it. LIV Golf Investments is the company. It's basically was a breakaway league there where they were attempting to poach guys off the PGA Tour, and they wanted the top players in the world. Norman, you know, has said that he wanted to give players an opportunity to control their schedules and play on the PGA Tour and in his league. And Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, just hasn't had any interest in working with him at all. And I think it's probably because of where the money's coming from.
So what kind of changes, Mark, does a new, fancy, very rich, hypothetical golf league propose to make it attractive to players who've only known the PGA Tour? What would this thing look like? How would it be different?
Well, it's fewer events. It's 54 holes, no cuts, shotgun starts to ensure, quote, faster and more exciting pace. In addition to individual stroke play, there's a team format to it as well, maximum of 48 players in each event on 12 four-man teams. Rosters are determined each week by a draft. There's ownership stake, I think, in each of those teams for the top players. Prize money for the eight events is $255 million versus as much as $25 million, with $20 million in individual prizes and another $5 million towards the top three teams. And then the top three individuals after the seven regular season events will also share a $30 million bonus.
And so these are changes. I mean, look, shotgun starts the idea that, you know, everything would start at the same time on different holes to, again, as you put it, hypothetically create this sort of more efficient, faster pace of play. I mean, but the big picture here is that they're throwing all this money on the table and they're sort of making a thing that feels almost like Formula One in some ways, where it's like a team structure as opposed to just a very individualistic one.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of aspects of it that are very enticing to some of the top names on the PGA Tour, certainly the money. I mean, you're talking about the richest purses in professional golf. I think the team aspect guys like, but just more so the fact that it's fewer events. Guys like Adam Scott, who's from Australia, who spends a ton of time in the U.S. He's got kids in school. So his schedule, you know, when you're playing from January through September, you know, there's a lot of stress on the family. And if you can play in seven events and you know, earn as much money as you would otherwise make on the PGA Tour, I think for guys like him, that's something he seriously has to consider. But it's just the, you know, the way it went down, and certainly Mickelson's comments muddied the waters. But I think the biggest factor, Pablo, is just the fact that it's Saudi Arabian money, and it, a lot of guys seem to think it's sports washing.
And when you say sports washing, Mark, that's the term that refers to when an authoritarian regime hosts sporting events like the Olympics or the World Cup to basically whitewash their human rights record, laundering their image in the eyes of the world.
Yeah, I think the Saudi effort is just another example of a government trying to take away the world's attention to its atrocities and just tell everybody, hey, you know, everything's great over here. We got all these famous rich golfers over here playing on our great golf courses. You know, don't look to the left. Everything's perfectly fine.
And so in all of this, as all of these big names are calculating how they feel about this, how much does the fact that there is a sports washing human rights concern factor in, Mark? Because look, Saudi Arabia is worth being very clear about this. It is still an absolute monarchy, right? This is an authoritarian government with so many questions following it about its commitment to human rights in very serious ways. Was that a factor for potential players in this?
I think it was a factor for some players. I mean, some players are going to tell you, you know, I'm just trying to play golf. I'm not getting into politics, but how in the hell can you ignore the alleged atrocities that, you know, that have allegedly occurred over there? I mean, it was just in mid-March, right after, about a month after Mickelson's comments, that we saw reports of the Saudis executing 81 men on March 12th.
We end today's show looking at Saudi Arabia. Over the weekend, the kingdom carried out the largest mass execution in its modern history, putting 81 men to death within a span of 24 hours. The official Saudi press agency said in a statement, the men were guilty of crimes ranging from terrorism to so-called deviant beliefs. Among those executions,
you know, which was the largest mass execution over there in years, according to those reports. So, I mean, how can you possibly ignore those headlines and accept their money and go play golf?
But the lifestyle, the improved life you could lead as a golfer, making more money, playing less golf, having a nicer work-life balance, so to speak. I mean, what were you hearing rumor-wise about current PGA Tour players who might have been actually interested in signing up for this?
I think before Mickelson's comments, there was a lot of interest from some of the world's top players. There were guys connected to it, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, and others, you know, Lee Westwood from England, Ian Poulter, guys who have been Ryder Cup mainstays for the Europeans, Adam Scott, as I mentioned, some of those guys, you know, it said that they had signed non-disclosure agreements with the proposed breakaway league and couldn't really talk about specifics. You saw some of the numbers. I think a lot of it was exaggerated, but certainly guys were intrigued by the opportunity to play fewer events, you know, get as much as $100 million in sign up and appearance fees, and then have an opportunity to compete for $25 million in seven or eight events was really, really enticing.
And so while some are enticed by all of the money that's on this table, it also does seem like there were many people who were not on board with this at all among the players.
No, I mean, right out of the gates, guys like Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, you know, said that their loyalty lied with the PGA Tour. There are some guys who would not consider it at all. And then, you know, when Phil Mickelson's comments came out shortly before the Genesis Invitational at Riviera outside L.A. in mid-February. It just seemed one by one, the top players in the world said, we're not doing it. We're sticking with the PGA Tour. And Jay Monahan and the tour really seemed to really halt the Super Golf League's momentum and just really it seemed like it was dead in the water. I was at Riviera when his comments were first published, and I mean, one after another, I mean, there wasn't much of anyone standing up for Phil and saying they must have been taken out of context. I can't believe he would have said that. I think there were very few people that were stunned that those words came out of his mouth. Justin Thomas called it egotistical.
Seems like a bit of a pretty, you know, egotistical statement. I don't know. I mean, it's like he's done a lot of great things to the PGA Tour. It's a big reason it is where it is. But, you know, him and others that are very adamant on that, if they're that passionate about it, go ahead.
You know, one by one, the PGA Tour brought out the top players from Jon Rahm, who was at the time ranked number one in the world, Victor Hovland from Norway. I mean, one by one, to a man, came out and said within a few days of Mickelson's comments that, you know, my loyalties to the PGA Tour, as long as the best players in the world are playing on the PGA Tour, I'm going to play on the PGA Tour. You know, I had a player tell me anonymously, this wasn't just Phil being Phil. This was a failed coup attempt, and how do you come back from that? You know, Phil's been controversial throughout his career. He's been outspoken at times. But this was, you know, this was not only the possibility of going overseas and taking Saudi money and playing in Norman's League, but it was about really dealing a blow to the future and well-being of the PGA Tour.
So, Mark, after the break, I need to ask you that question. How can Phil Mickelson come back from a failed coup?
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Mark, it occurs to me that the biggest headlines when this story first broke were about Phil Mickelson very blithely overlooking human rights abuses, and I get why. But Saudi Arabia funding the Super Golf League concept was already out there before that, right? I mean, the idea was not nearly as controversial, and it actually seems like the biggest reason the PGA Tour was suddenly freaking out about all of this was because Phil was openly undermining the business of the PGA Tour, which led to this very long-written apology that Phil posted on Twitter.
Yeah, he said, although it doesn't look this way, given my recent comments, my actions throughout this process have always been in the best interest of golf, my peer players, sponsors, fans. But then he adds, there is the problem of off-the-record comments being shared without context and without my consent. But the bigger issue that I use words I sincerely regret that do not reflect my true feelings or intentions.
And Shipnuck, the writer who's doing the unauthorized bio, he roundly denies that this was an off-the-record conversation.
He said he never said the comments were off the record. He made it clear that the comments from Phil, any information from the conversation with Phil, would be used in his upcoming book. And he said there was no question in his mind that Phil knew it was on the record.
Right. And Shipnuck himself explained as much recently on the Fire Pit podcast.
I'm a biographer working on a book. He's asked to speak. Every single thing he says to me is going in the book unless we agree expressly that it's not. And if he wants to set some ground rules and if he wanted to go off of the record, I would have pushed back really hard because this was my one chance to talk to him. But he never asked to go off the record. He never said it was on background. He never said this is just between me and you or tried to intimate anything like that. Whether in the text beforehand and when we got on the phone, he just started talking. At that point, it is an on-the-record interview with a biographer. That's not even in question. I think every other writer in the world would have the same attitude.
And so all we have from Phil since he gave those quotes, which he says were off the record, but Shipnuck says we're very much on the record talking to a journalist, is that Twitter apology. And this is where I think of what Randall Shambly came out and said in public, Mark, because this is the former PGA Tour player and now the Golf Channel analyst who said, quote, just read Phil's statement. It's six paragraphs. The first paragraph sets the stage for him being a victim. The second paragraph is him pretending to be an activist. The third and fourth paragraphs are about spin and damage control / money. And the fifth and sixth are him saying he's a good guy, end quote.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy, who's, you know, one of the most insightful and well-respected players on tour, you know, said he thought Mickelson's comments were surprising and disappointing, and it's just sad.
Like, I don't want to kick someone while he's dying, obviously, but I thought they were naive, selfish, egotistical, ignorant. A lot of words to describe that interaction he had with Shipnuck. It was just very surprising and disappointing, sad.
What were the responses from the people who pay Phil to advertise their products? What was the fallout in terms of the marketing and advertising world?
Yeah, one by one, he lost several of his top sponsors. KPMG ended its relationship with him. Amstel Light ended its relationship. Workday ended its relationship. Callaway, which basically gave him a sponsorship agreement through the rest of his career, paused their relationship. The American Express tournament in La Quinta, California, which Mickelson hosted, and the tournament also benefited his foundation. It ended its relationship with him and then said that the tournament would no longer benefit his charity. So several severe blows to his pocketbook and his reputation.
So his sponsors have been leaving him, and we have not seen him on tour at all since those comments emerged. But what we don't have clarity on, Mark, it seems like, is whether the PGA Tour, the thing he tried to create this revolt against, has actually suspended him themselves.
The PGA Tour does not announce publicly discipline of its players. You know, Dustin Johnson took some time away. He said he had wrenched his back moving some jet skis. It was later reported there were other reasons for that, and he was actually suspended. But Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner at the Players' Championship a few weeks ago, was asked if Phil could have played in the Players' Championship if he wanted. And I was a little bit surprised because Monahan said he had not had a conversation with Mickelson at that point.
I have not talked to Phil since he made his comments and since he said that he was stepping away. And like I said, I think the ball is in his court. I would welcome a phone call from him. But it's hard for me to talk about the different scenarios that could play out. And so as difficult as it is to read some of the things that were said, ultimately the conversation will be had when he's ready to have it. And I'll be ready to have it as well.
Is Phil serving a suspension right now? You know, I don't think so. Will he serve some sort of suspension when he comes back? That's going to be up to him and Monahan. Again, it doesn't have any bearing on him not playing in the Masters. And, you know, you just got to wonder if Fred Ridley, the Masters chairman, Augusta National chairman, made a phone call and said, hey, not this year. We don't want the negative attention. You're too hot right now, but we'll see if and when Phil comes back.
Right. I mean, the Masters is a separate entity, as you alluded to. Apart from the PGA Tour, it's run by Augusta National. And meanwhile, Phil has never made an official announcement about this week in Augusta. And so with Phil Mickelson at age 51, who may or may not be punished by the people who he tried to overthrow, I mean, what is next for him at this point in this latter phase of his life?
I think the big question going forward, Pablo, is when do we see him again? Do we see him back on the PGA Tour? He's the defending PGA champion. You know, the PGA Championship at Southern Hills in May, will we see him there? I think what's kind of been lost in this is we've asked, has he been disciplined by the PGA Tour? Can he come back to the PGA Tour? Does he have a spot in Saudi after what he said about the people financing that league? You know, did he take money from the Saudis and does he have to give it back? I mean, there's just a lot of unknown questions.
That is a great point that I hadn't considered until just now by being so blunt about the Saudi government in ways that were embarrassing domestically. He also did say a lot about what the Saudi government does not want being so publicly broadcast. What is the state of the union right now with the Saudi Golf League? How close are they to actually existing? Because it seemed like they were close, but now things have obviously changed radically.
Norman and his LIV Golf Investments announced right after shortly after the Players that they're moving forward with 8 series events that's going to take place from June through late October. And they've announced dates in London, Portland, Oregon, one of Donald Trump's courses in Bedminster, New Jersey, Boston, Chicago, Bangkok, Saudi Arabia, and a yet-to-be-determined site for the championship in late October. You know, again, most of the world's best players, John Rahm, Hovland, Justin Thomas, nearly all of them have said, you know, as long as the best players are going to be on the PGA Tour, that's where we're going to be. But there are going to be some guys who will go because of the money and because of the shorter schedule. And some people have speculated that it might end up being a proof of concept deal where lesser players compete in Norman's League and make a ton of money with it that they otherwise wouldn't have made because they weren't among the top players on tour. And that's going to be, you know, pretty tempting for some of the best players in the world.
Yeah, and it is worth reiterating that as much as this is a story about foreign governments, as you just said, these are events that will be happening in America, domestically, very close to where the PGA Tour operates. And what has the tour's response been, Mark, formally to this league doing all of these things that you've just described?
The tour has made it clear to its players and agents, you know, a couple of times this year already at mandatory meetings that any player who plays in the Saudi League or signs up for the Saudi League is going to be immediately suspended from the PGA Tour and potentially face a lifetime ban. Jay Monahan has left no doubt about what's going to happen to players who play in the Saudi League. So, you know, like I said earlier, in the past, the tour has given waivers for guys to play in overseas events, the Saudi International being one of them. But Monahan has already said there will be no waivers given for events by the Saudi Golf League on U.S. soil.
Yeah, Jay Monahan, the president of the PGA Tour, has said that he has no interest in aiding and abetting this concept. But it does also seem at the same time, Mark, like the very possibility of this league has also forced the PGA Tour to change some already.
Yeah, I think there have been some benefits for current PGA Tour pros that came out of this. The introduction of the Player Impact Program, which awards $30 million this year. It was $20 million last year to the players, you know, basically in a popularity contest, impact on TV and social media and whatnot. Tiger Woods was the first winner, will probably win for the next 10 years, even after he's retired. But, you know, they increased the purse of the Players Championship, which is the tour's signature event. They're looking at possibly introducing some sort of team concept in the fall and having some big events for the very top players. So I think there are going to be some changes. Some of it's good. I hate to give Mickelson credit, but he kind of pushed the button and got things rolling, but just did it in possibly the worst way he could have tried.
And so the last question I have for you here, Mark, is about that. It's about that quote that you gave us from that unnamed PGA Tour player who said, how in the hell do you come back from that? I mean, we see second, third, fourth, fifth acts in American life all the time. But in your view, can Phil Mickelson actually come back from all of this?
I think time heals all wounds. I think we saw what Tiger Woods went through off the course with some of his personal problems. He's still the most beloved player on the PGA Tour that moves the needle more than anyone. I'm not going to say Phil's done. I think Phil's going to have to make some serious apologies and get things right with the PGA Tour and his fellow pros. But I would never say never that we won't see him again. Nobody imagined he could have won a PGA Championship at age 50 at Kiawah Island last year and become the oldest major champion. Phil did a lot of good things for golf, but he stepped in a pretty big pile of you-know-what this time.
Mark Schlabaugh, thank you for explaining exactly how big that pile of you-know-what is on ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo. Thank you for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.